Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. It has been an amazing past few days in American politics. History was made in the election of former Vice President Joe Biden and California Senator Kamala Harris, now President and Vice President-elect. This election, particularly significant for Howard University, with the Vice President-elect completing her undergraduate work at the Mecca. Well, that is where we begin our discussion tonight as we discuss all things Howard University. Lines are open if you have a comment or a question at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. We, of course, are talking to Howard University President Dr. Wayne Frederick. Dr. Frederick, thanks for joining the conversation.
Thanks for having me, Harold. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. You sound like you got a little pep in your step today, a little energy.
I do.
Yes, indeed.
That's what Jesus said.
So, you know, Dr. Frederick, the big question that people were talking about on Saturday after the news broke was, you know, where were you when the Biden-Harris ticket was confirmed? Where were you? What was going on with you? What was going through your head?
So. I was driving to Wilmington, Delaware, with my 16-year-old son. I know you're not going to believe this, but coincidentally, he had a game there 2 minutes away from the Chase Center. And he was the one who saw it and let me know. And it was great to watch him because election night, he came into my room at 3 a.m. and said, "Dad, I can't sleep. This is nerve-wracking." And so to be there with him when it was cold and just watch the sheer joy and pride that he took in, you know, Senator Harris's Vice President-elect Harris, win was unbelievable. And so it was one of those special moments, as they say, you'll always remember where you were and who you were with.
And he's not old enough to vote yet.
He's not. But boy, he and my 14-year-old daughter took such an interest in this election that it was absolutely incredible.
Yes, indeed. I'm sure you were proud that he couldn't sleep for the right reason. I'm sure that a lot of people in the Howard community could not sleep last week. Talk to me about what this means for, you know, Howard University. I mean, certainly a big deal for you, you know, as president, but, you know, you were also a student there. And it's got to be a very special feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Howard is a special place, as I say all the time. And I think we provide an excellent education. We have faculty who do absolutely great research. The connective tissue of the organization, the staff really make sure that, you know, everything works well. They're very supportive of the entire environment. But at the end of the day, you can sell and talk about Howard being special. But when things like this happen, you really get to live it because, you know, Kamala Harris is the embodiment of our motto of truth and service. She is extremely intelligent, very poised, extremely competent, has had an incredible experience. There are probably few vice presidents more that would have ever been more prepared than she is. And so when you think of the 48 men who went before her, and today I spent some time reviewing those 48 men, you know, obviously 48 white men that went before her, it's a special moment that Howard would have played such a pivotal role in her development, in her preparation, and ultimately in her ascent to the highest to the second highest office in the land.
Talk to me a little bit about that Howard history of a political engagement. I would argue that this is just one of those prime examples where it's not just so much what you learn in class, but it's also the discussions that students have been having on the quad and on the streets of Georgia Avenue, that the debate, the muscular discourse about politics and civic action, it seems to have really laid the foundation for the vice president-elect.
Yeah, absolutely. A few things there, Howell, that you touched on that I would like to elaborate on. The first is Howard's history of producing these types of individuals is rich. Right? You go back to, post-Jim Crow, the first popularly elected African-American senator was a Howard alum, Senator Edward Brooke. Then you have a Thurgood Marshall, the first African-American Supreme Court justice. You have an Elijah Cummings. Currently serving in Congress, you have a Gregory Meeks. And so that history of having people on the campus who can partake in the discourse with one another along with what they get in the classroom does provide something special. And it's not just in American politics. The first Prime Minister of Trinidad and Tobago, Sir Eric Williams, was a political science professor at Howard. And he would gain independence for Trinidad and Tobago. And so it's an international flavor. Ted Mitchell, the Prime Minister of Grenada, was a graduate of the math department at Howard. And you can go on and on. Throughout the African diaspora, Howard has produced leaders and littered the world with them. So it is a strong legacy. And clearly, the interaction and engagement with others on campus is a very important ingredient. And that's because you have such a wide diversity of students who come to Howard. You have students from 40-something states, and we've had students from 70-something countries. So at any given time, you walk across the yard from the Founders Library to Childers Hall, the Ira Rogers Theater, and you meet the world. And you will meet the world of ideas and the world of opinions. And so holding your own in that environment prepares you for just about any office in any country.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking to Howard University President Dr. Wayne Frederick about the election of the Biden-Harris ticket, specifically the vice president-elect, a Howard alum, and other issues as well. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. One of the things that I'm already starting to see, Dr. Frederick, with even before the election of the Biden-Harris ticket, is that, mainstream media has to do a bit of education about black people again, just as it did back in 2008 when Barack Obama ascended to the presidency. But this one is more detailed, part and parcel because the president-elect is the member of a black sorority, Alpha Kappa Alpha, and that she is, she is part of that huge, broader, black culture, the California, culture and Howard culture. So it looks like there's going to be a lot of black people 101 for the next couple of years.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because some aspects of the culture, like you mentioned, the AKA, the sororities, and when you look at the Divine Nine in general and what they do in their communities, the service they provide, the people they bring together, And I think what you immediately find is that there is a theme of giving back. There is a theme of sisterhood and brotherhood. There is a theme of sticking together and supporting one another. And I think that's instructive for the rest of the country, especially a country as divided as we are. And that's why I tell people that, you know, VP-elect Harris is uniquely prepared for the task and for the moment. Because a lot of those things that she would have gathered in terms of working with people and how you work out differences, how you bridge divides, how you build alliances, a lot of that is what you get from these organizations, right? And they give back. It's a major part of what they do. But there's so much else that they bring, right? And that they offer the young men and young women who join them. And you saw that as well in terms of her support. You know, her line sisters were there with her all along. You know what I mean? And I think that that is again, so important.
You hosted an event called the Howard Change Makers. That was on Election Day. Briefly share what that was about.
You know, what we wanted to do, and we, you know, I wanted it to be apolitical, but having her on the precipice, as it were, of history, of a historic moment, I thought win or lose, it was important for us to recognize her before and for us to, bring attention to the fact that she's part of a legacy of change makers who are produced by Howard, who have had a Howard education and a Howard experience. And so we decided to gather and to talk about some of those other people and to also honor the senator at that time and to recognize the fact that she was on a major party ticket on the brink of a historic election. And we thought it was important to do that beforehand. And so that's exactly what we did because we thought it was special. Now that she has been elected, we certainly will also plan another special Howard tradition this week as well.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I'm talking to Howard University President Dr. Wayne Frederick about all things Howard University. Of course, the election of the Biden-Harris ticket and special spotlight on the Vice President-elect Kamala Harris. I did want to switch gears because there was a big announcement that also came out today. This is not about politics. This is actually about fitness and the Queen Bee. And, you know, yeah, Beyonce, for those of you who don't know, who doesn't know. But but talk to me, Dr. Frederick, about what's going on with Beyonce and Peloton and the university.
Yeah, the what did they say? The beehive was landed, right?
yeah, absolutely.
Peloton and you know, Beyonce have a partnership. They have they're allowing subscriptions to Peloton for 30 days for our students, and I think it's great. You know, especially during this pandemic. Getting people to stay fit, take care of their health, both mental and physical, is important. And, you know, Peloton is not only the bike, they'll also supply some bikes at Howard as well. So students who have subscriptions, you know, at home when they come to campus, they can use their subscriptions on the equipment we'll have on campus going forward. But they also have, as you know, different exercises and routines that you can do that don't involve the bike as well. So we are looking forward to the participation with them. Once again, I think Beyonce is doing great things, you know, in the community to bring about change and make sure that health and wellness is at the top of our agenda. And I think it's a very great partnership for us.
But it's only for the students, not for staff, right?
That's right.
You know, Dr. Frederick, you know, they say that we, you know, a lot of Americans are dealing with, you know, the pandemic 15 or more, the weight gain because of, you know, of the shutdowns. And so certainly this is a great, you know, great thing for the students. And, but I think it also, you know, also suggests that we all need to really, as much as we can, considering, you know, how things are moving with the pandemic right now, do what we can to stay healthy.
Yeah, I think it's extremely important. We all need to be paying attention, and it's not just our physical health, it's our mental health as well. This isolation is abnormal. The socialization is what we are as human beings, and getting out and being able to interact with one another is key. But unfortunately, you know, just as the Maryland governor announced today, the country is heading in the wrong direction with respect to this pandemic. And unfortunately, we have to take serious actions, and we have to go back to some of the actions that we took, you know, back in May and April and even March, because it's not heading in the right direction.
And it's not over by a long shot. I want to talk to you a little bit after we take a break about, you know, the promise of a vaccine from Pfizer and some other issues around the pandemic. But we'll talk about that on the other side. We're talking to Howard University President Dr. Wayne Frederick about a great many things, and of course all things Howard University. If you have a comment or a question, you can give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. This conversation is continuing on Sirius XM Channel 141. John Mons and the original Quiet Storm are next on WHUR, but we'll be back on Sirius XM in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're continuing our conversation with Howard University President Dr. Wayne Frederick. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can certainly tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. So, you know, Dr. Frederick, the announcement was made yesterday about Pfizer showing some promise about a COVID-19 vaccine, a really, really big deal. Certainly, it may give us a little bit of dim light at the end of the tunnel, but we are not out of the woods yet. Your thoughts about that announcement?
Yeah, you know, definitely very encouraging news. 90% effective, that means that, you know, when they looked at it, the people who got the vaccine, you know, it prevented them from getting infections. What we need now, though, because the time has been so short, is you still have to ask yourself, how durable is it, though, right? How long do the antibodies that the vaccine would have caused one to develop, how long will those antibodies be around? And so there's still lots of unanswered questions. It was an interim report. They were very transparent about that. So it's very encouraging data, very optimistic for having a very effective vaccine. But the reality is we still are going to need time to draw full conclusions. And I think we should still maintain some caution as we go forward. And the distribution of the vaccine, I believe the Pfizer CEO said they would have 10 to 15 million doses by the end of the year in a country of 320, 330 million people. You know, it's still a long way to go. And so we have to be realistic about that. How does it get distributed? Who does it get distributed to first? And, you know, how does that help? So there's still a lot to be answered, but definitely a step in the right direction yesterday.
And all of this, you know, happening as we knew it was going to happen, the Supreme Court now hearing a challenge today to the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. And despite some pundit thoughts that they may be leaning, you know, towards keeping it intact. You know, we've heard that before with a great many things, and this, yeah. You know, you're afraid to even say, well, it sounds like that's what they're going to do, but the reality is you just don't know. And this is probably one of the most significant cases, considering that we are in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah, you know, I think you pose this appropriately. You never want to draw conclusions about what the Supreme Court justices are going to do. Their questions, regardless of how their questions are posed, you don't know. You know, Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, for instance, is known for not even speaking.
Exactly.
In the chamber. So you have to, I do not get too excited one way or the other. You know, about what's being said and so on in the chamber. You know, when the ruling comes out, we'll know what the deal is. And you're right, in the middle of a pandemic, it would be very, very devastating for so many African Americans in this country who are at risk for contracting this virus. If there's a blow to Obamacare that ultimately, you know, robs them of their coverage. I have not seen a plan to replace it, and therefore, you know, it wouldn't be wise that that's done. So we will see what happens.
Yes, indeed. And certainly, you know, in the midst of the pandemic, we certainly need to continue to be, you know, girded up and to be as diligent as we possibly can be in protecting ourselves, you know, and others. Masks, hand washing, social distance, the whole nine. One of the things that kind of, you know, piggybacks on this, you wrote an op-ed with the New York Times with four other black college presidents about African Americans and clinical trials. Talk to me about you know, your thoughts about clinical trials and the kind of steep hill that African Americans still have to deal with, and, you know, as it relates to, you know, dealing with chemical trials, and, you know, you start talking about the Tuskegee experiment and so much. It's still such a difficult thing to address for our community.
Yeah. You know, so first, let's start with the clinical trials. I mean, the Tuskegee experiment, I think it would be doing it an injustice to call it a clinical trial. Subjected African-American men to a very devastating disease of syphilis, and knowingly, with a known treatment available, left them untreated and basically recorded what would happen to them. And it was devastating. That has created significant mistrust that people will abuse black bodies. And so that distrust for the medical community is well rooted in events like this. You come into this modern era, and institutions that society should hold up, that should be protecting the larger public, have failed us, right? So whether it's law enforcement, the criminal justice system, I mean, all of these things. So I think what you have in the African-American community is well-earned suspicion of our major institutions. And therefore, when you talk about an apparatus that has been put together to produce a vaccine that you now want them to take, they have a suspicion. And that suspicion will continue on because there is no belief right now. So what we must do, and the reason we wrote up it, is that institutions like Howard University, Meharry Medical College, Morehouse School of Medicine, Charles Drew School of Medicine, we believe that we have to step in to fill that void where there's a lack of trust. And we have to afford people in this country, minorities in this country, the opportunity to participate in what could be a life-saving issue, especially considering that African-Americans were disproportionately impacted. If African-Americans don't participate in the trial in significant numbers, we will not be sure that it is safe for them to get this vaccine and that it is as effective in them. And then when you also, on top of that, add the fact that there could be another spike of the disease as we're seeing right now, when the vaccine does get approved, if, again, African-Americans are last to take it, that could further devastate the African-American community. So I think it is extremely important that our HBCUs step up and fill that void, provide trust to the community. We insist on participating on the science side as well as on the clinical side. And I think that way we can come to the community and assure the community that the vaccine is safe and that they should take it.
But how do you really, you know, bridge that gap? Do you need to have a, and when I say the gap between those who understand that there needs to be more people of color in trials.
I think there are a couple of things that you could do. One is we need to participate on the science side. So I will not be satisfied if we simply were going in and just recruiting patients to take the vaccine. What we have been interested in and what the clinical trial at Howard is going to participate in is one in which we have said to the scientists that we have scientists as well who would like to participate in the science side, and they've been open to that. So that way we can say, listen, the science of this is strong, it is a sound vaccine that has been made, and it's a vaccine that we think will do you well. Then we want to participate in recruiting the patients so that we can tell them about the clinical trial. We can tell them about the risk and the benefits, and we can assure them that we're going to do everything possible to protect them and to look out for their interests as we recruit them to participate in a trial. And I think, again, that has the opportunity to go a long way in getting them to participate. You know, the navigation of the clinical trial is not something we talk about often, but it is a critical issue. Oftentimes, these patients do not have the means to come back and forth to get tested. They have to leave work, et cetera. And so we have to make accommodations for them to assist them in that navigation back and forth. And I think, Harold, if we get those things right and we're able to be open with the community, we're able to have different mechanisms and use all of our channels to communicate with them. So we have to recruit community leaders, right? We have to recruit the pastors in our community. We have to recruit the leaders in our community. We have to recruit the young people in our community. And we have to make sure that we message to all of them in the appropriate manner so that our argument to them as to why they should take it resonates and resonates in a way that would then make them comfortable and let them know that they're safe as well.
That was going to be my next question. Do we need to recruit the Oprah Winfreys, the Tyler Perrys, the Spike Lees, the LeBron James, the Dr. Wayne Fredericks? To do a you know, public information blitz to, you know, to the black community, and, you know, for those who are still shouting about, you know, the Tuskegee experiment and saying I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, but I think you make a very important point, and that starts, as you said, it starts with me. Mm-hmm. I'm a type 1 diabetic. As you know, I have sickle cell.
Yes.
This is actually Diabetes Month. And so I am prepared, if offered the opportunity, to participate in a clinical trial, to participate. That's how strongly I feel about this, Howard. I think it's important to lead by example, and that's the confidence that I have in the safety as well as the need for me to participate as well.
I want to talk about another op-ed. Yes, you've been very busy with the op-eds. And this one is a different topic, but in my mind, just as serious, where we're talking about life and death with COVID and vaccine. We're talking about economic life and death for our community. And you wrote this op-ed with CNN, on CNN, and it was about the comment that the Wells Fargo CEO made about a very limited pool of black talent to recruit from. I am very familiar with that comment, and I remember when the reports came out, because it was reported on CNBC, which I watch, you know, religiously, and that comment or that attitude, you know, is nothing new. But I think the thing that is really distressing to me is it illustrates, the gap again between, CEOs who do not interact with black people, and that is often what happens when we know that there is a huge pool, there is an ocean of talent. When you heard that, obviously you were prompted to write the op-ed, but talk to me a little bit more about your thought process.
Yeah, so first thing is, and I should make this clear, I actually had my team reach out to Wells Fargo because I always believe in direct dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my first entree. My team members did speak to a couple of their team members, but that did not lead to me speaking to the CEO. So I decided to proceed with, voicing my opinion because I thought it was important. Not so much only, I should say, for him, but he is voicing something that others think and may say privately, but not get out publicly in the way that what he said got out. And so to address that, I thought I would write about it and I would bring people's attention to it. So that we, again, with the goal always being to improve and expand the dialogue and the discourse. Because I felt that if we had that conversation about it, we could then put this in a different place. We could start having a real dialogue in our country about what is appropriate and what's not around these issues. And you're right, there's an abundance of black talent. But you have to look for it where it is, and you have to be willing to do it and look there. I mean, the Supreme Court justices, the majority of them in our history, have graduated from either Harvard or Yale. Nothing against graduates from Harvard or Yale, but is that really representative of the full legal intellect in our country? And so it's the same type of mindset. If we keep going back to the same well, to the same stream to fish from, we're going to get the same kind of fish. And so the point I was making is that the talent is there. He has to be committed, and others have to be committed to looking for it where it is.
And particularly in the financial industry, just like the tech industry, they have historically been virtually devoid of you know, black talent, black management. The numbers, the percentages, you know, were particularly low. And this Wells Fargo incident comment is very similar to what we've seen in Silicon Valley. And, you know, you've been very vocal about, you know, Howard University's, you know, participation and, you know, expanding the, you know, the culture of Silicon Valley. You know, it is the same thing, and it could be finance. It could be, you know, high tech. It could be, you know, just anything. Is that if you're not looking for us, you will not find us.
That's right. That's right. And to look for us, you have to turn on the light. You have to go to somewhere different. You have to ask people questions so that you can be clear about where you need to be looking. But you have to make a concerted effort to do all of this. And if that effort is not concerted, it's not genuine, you're not going to find us. You know, and that, unfortunately, is the reality. And too many people hide behind that as opposed to stretching themselves and getting to where they need to be in order for us to understand what we're doing. And I think that that's, and to understand what they're doing with respect to recruiting, and I think that that's unfortunate. But we have to push them. We have to insist that they look in the right places. And in that article, I was making the point that especially looking at HBCUs for that talent, you'll have lots of success.
The CEO of Wells Fargo, Charlie Scharf, he did apologize, you know, for his, you know, his comments. But did Wells Fargo reach out to Howard University after this with any kind of commitment of recruitment, partnership, anything after this?
Yeah, no. And I would say, in all fairness to him, not yet. He and I have not had a chance to speak. I still am holding out hope that I will get the opportunity to speak to him directly, because, like I said, a lot of these things do require that dialogue. And I believe in dialogue. And hopefully he and I will get to speak and, you know, work together to address some of it. Howard's not the only solution by any means. And I'm not trying to paint that picture, but definitely it would be a start.
In the, you know, I'm about to wrap up here, Dr. Frederick, but I did want to give you, you know, a final chance to just express, you know, what these past few days have meant, you know, to you, to the university, particularly as it relates to the participation of, you know, of Howard University, you know, students, and how, you know, despite the fact that, you know, they are, they're in school, but they're not on campus, and they still have that cohesive spirit. I'll toot my horn again. My daughter, the first thing she called me as soon as she found out, you know, and of course, you know, I was on the air, you know. You know, and I got a sorry dad, but it's important. You know, this is a big deal. And then, of course, another Howard University alum, you know, my father called me. I was on the air again. So, you know, those Howard folks are wearing me out, you know. But you know, again, from your perspective, yeah. This is a big deal also for the young people, you know, many of whom this is really, you know, kind of their first or second opportunity to vote.
Yeah, listen, 2020 has been difficult, especially for black people in America. It's been a difficult year. We've had more than one crisis and a very bruising, divisive election. And so when you put all of that together, it really was probably an opportunity to take a deep breath, both figuratively and you know, pragmatically. It was an opportunity for young people to at least stop themselves and say, as heavy as this year has been, they could have walked around a little lighter these past few days, feeling the pride that they all seem to have in a Senator Harris, a Vice President-elect Harris, and also feeling a familiarity with the highest offices of the land, not seeming to be a mystery of how you get there, but seeing somebody like themselves get there, and that helps demystify it. So I think when all is said and done, especially for the young people, it was an important few days. And like everything else, sometimes you have to stop and reap the harvest and, you know, take the opportunity to relish in the victory, knowing fully well that the march and the journey and the task is still at hand. And they now have to take the baton from Vice President-elect and, you know, run the rest of the race as well.
Well, as we know, this race is long from over. It is actually, we're still in the starting blocks because this is not finished. A lot ahead, and a lot's going to happen between now and January 20th, and we will continue to keep our ear to the ground. So Dr. Wayne Frederick, president of Howard University, thank you so much for spending some time with us, and I appreciate our conversation as always.
Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
Absolutely. That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, November 10th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now, stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night.